You know why you listen to this station. It plays new music, supports your community, and provides up-to-date news that you know you can trust. And unlike other stations, the people who work and volunteer here are a part of your community. Remember, though, they do this on a shoestring budget. The solution is the Community Radio Initiative. You can find out more details at mycri.ca. In just a few clicks, you can generate an email to send to the politicians who need to hear your message. mycri.ca.
You are now tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Want to know more about the channel? Find us online at cjsf.ca.
It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Angela Mano's paintings shimmer with a quiet, radical devotion to the living earth, inviting us to encounter animals and ecosystems as sacred presences rather than distant resources. Bill McKibben, a prominent environmentalist, author, and climate activist, has said this about her work: Angela Mano's icons are powerful reminders of the beauty and holiness of the world we are destroying and of our duty to protect what remains. Today, in our time together, we'll explore not only the loss of species, but also why contemplative attention to the life we share may be essential for any authentic response to our ecological crisis, including the bold task of reinventing the human at the species level. Artist and iconographer Angela Mano will be our guest today. Angela Mano is an award-winning visual artist based in New York City, whose work weaves together spirituality, ecology, and contemporary iconography. A Bard College graduate, she also studied at the San Francisco Art Institute, Parsons, and in France, and trained in Byzantine Russian iconography with Master Vladislav Andreyev. Her work has been exhibited at major institutions, including the Smithsonian, the National Museum of Women in the Arts, and NASA's collections, as she is especially known for her series, Contemporary Icons of Threatened and Endangered Species. She's the creator of the Sacred Biodiversity Oracle. So please join us for the next hour as we explore our relationship with all life on this precious planet with our guest, Angela Mano. I'm speaking with Angela, where she is staying in Scotland by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Angela, welcome.
Thank you so much, Justine. I'm so thrilled to be with you today.
Oh, I'm thrilled that we're able to make this connection and be together. I just want to ask, first of all, what led you to creating this Sacred Biodiversity Oracle? How did you come to make this effort?
Well, it was a natural evolution, actually. I was originally studying traditional Byzantine Russian iconography, as you had mentioned, and I was fascinated by the gorgeous pigments and the ground up stones, the 23 karat gold on wood, everything about the materials and also the subject matter, which was the angels and saints. And so I practiced that for many years. And because of, I would say, the great influence of Thomas Berry, the geologian, I couldn't just stick with these images of the saints and angels. I really felt something was missing from the canon. And so I felt that I needed to expand the canon to bring nature into the forefront. And so my first endeavor was actually the icon of the Earth from space, which actually is in the card deck. It's on the back of every card. When I did that, before I did it, actually, I consulted with Thomas Berry to tell him about my idea. And it conformed. The stages in creating an icon are liturgical, so everything has a symbolic meaning. And asked him what he thought about my idea to introduce this new icon and actually integrate the stages of the Earth and the universe coming into being. And that's all that symbolism is embedded in that icon, which most people don't know. I haven't written about it very much, but eventually, that was in the year 1999. It was just prior to the turn of the millennium, and I felt it would be a fitting subject. And then in 2016, actually, I became aware of the biodiversity crisis, and in particular, the honeybee, as a matter of fact, and what, you know, what was happening with the colony collapse disorder. And so that was the first icon I did in the series, actually. So that's pretty much how it all evolved.
Well, I need to go back to the materials that you use, because if you're talking about biodiversity and the earth, you're actually using pieces of earth in the actual paintings that you did.
Yes, that's exactly right. So the materials that are used in creating an icon are all natural materials. There's no synthetics involved. The only thing is, obviously, the gold has been processed. But the idea in traditional iconography is that you're giving glory to God, so you use the natural materials. And it mirrors our own creation, because we're made up of the same materials too, you know? So everything that's used, say, like, the ground up semi-precious stones, earth ochres, the clay, which is symbolic of our earthly nature, our physical nature, and then the gold that's laid over it represents our divine nature, and the gesso is made up of marble dust and chalk. So it's a meditation, and it's healing in and of itself, because working with those materials, like you said, it's earth materials. And even the finish is linseed oil. So you don't use any of these synthetic products that are used generally today.
So I imagine just being in the presence of the actual paintings, that there's an emanation coming out of it just of itself because it's earth. I was so impressed with that.
That's what people actually have said to me in looking at them, that they have a presence. That's the word that people use, that there's a presence. And you're probably right. It is the materials, you know, because there's surface, but then there's also essence. There's a depth to them. And one of the things is there's a layering process that happens. So you start with very coarse pigments, and that represents chaos, you know, so it's like the universe emerging. And then you overlay with what's called floats. In today's parlance, they would be called glazes. And so you do this layering, and at the end, after it dries and you put the linseed oil on, you can see all the layers. It comes alive.
Oh, yes, yes. And it just goes back to the idea that Thomas Berry really was a big influence on your work. So talk about your relationship with Thomas Berry and who he was.
Well, Thomas Berry is a geologian. He passed away in June of 2009, and he was a professor at Fordham and the president of the American Tay Art Association. I mean, he's written some of the greatest books, The Dream of the Earth and The Great Work. He was also a scholar of Eastern religions, and he was a cultural historian. I met him actually in San Francisco when he was speaking at one of Brian Swim's classes at the California Institute for Integral Studies. And I was working on a book at the time, an anthology, and I wanted to ask him to contribute to a chapter on human-earth relations. And he was very taken with the artwork from my series, Conscious Evolution, The World at One. Those images were meant to illustrate, to open up each chapter. So that's how we met. And then we both, he lived in Riverdale and I was living in New York City. So we used to get together and have lunch, and he became like an informal mentor to me. We'd have lunch every week, and he would just talk to me about his, you know, his thoughts, and they just, you know, I absorbed them. And one of the most important influences was the idea of the universe as creative. And that opened up an insight to me that how was I able to create as an artist, but also in general, how are people able to create? It's because the whole universe is creative and we participate in that. So that was a very important insight for me.
Well, I think it's really important to talk about art as being a transformative creation. You know, people might look at art very passively and say, oh yeah, that's a pretty picture, or that's whatever it is. But what you have done has to do with true inspiration and creativities, and it's transformative. So talk about art as transformative.
I think it can be. I had another mentor by the name of Ewart Cousins. I don't know if you know, but he was also a scholar of, actually, he was the general editor of the Classics of Western Spirituality, which is volumes of literature from, you know, 12th century mystics and everything. And when I met him, I was still working exclusively in iconography, traditional iconography. And according to the teachings that I was exposed to, all Western art is decadent ever since, you know, the icons were created. And I thought to myself, well, what does that mean for me as an artist, as a creative person? Is there nothing that I can do that's new on the earth that could be healing and help the human condition? And he said, yes, if the artist is tuned in, and they can become a transformative agent. But it's not true in all instances. You know, it depends on what your intention is. And
so what was your intention?
Well, my intention is to help the spiritual evolution of the planet, actually. it always has been, and my art has always been sort of a tool in that, is raising awareness, but evoking emotion. And so that's what I like about this deck, the Sacred Biodiversity deck, because with the exercises that I have in Visio Divina, which is an Eastern, and also I think Well, it's mostly the Orthodox tradition because that's what they use, gazing. They gaze at the images of the icons. What that does is it opens you up intuitively by doing that. So it's not a passive exercise. And what happens is you can't help but have an emotional response, an empathetic emotional response. That's what these exercises are devised to do in conjunction with the images.
That visio divina is like sacred, seeing with the heart, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, in the Western Church, there's something called lectio divina. So it's you read literature, usually the Bible, but you only take like very small chunks at a time, so maybe a sentence or two, and then you meditate on it and see, you know, what comes up for you. So this is just the visual correlate of that. So you're looking at something and seeing what comes up for you.
Well, I'd love to go through at least one card. I mean, there are 36 cards in the deck. Mm-hmm. They're not just your everyday animals, so to speak. Plankton or an obscure orchid, an armadillo or an anteater. I just love what you chose. One of the ones you chose was the honeybee. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you to talk about the honeybee, to say the different aspects of the card. What else happens when they look at this card? And
okay, I'm going to look for it in the guidebook.
It's on page 113.
113, okay. So would you like me to read from the guidebook?
Sure. Why? Yes.
Okay, but this is starting off with the wisdom, which is basically the didactive part. It's... Or I can go straight to contemplation whatever you'd like. So,
well, let's say, all right, let's just outline. First of all, each card includes the wisdom or brief overview of the image. Mm-hmm. And then it includes contemplation, and that's that sacred seeing part. Mm-hmm. And then it includes reflection. So that takes us beyond knowledge and information into the intuitive experience, because you're encouraging us to journal or do something called automatic writing. And I want you to talk about that. And then at the end, the last thing that's there is called action. And you use a QR code there that you can actually use, like take your phone and take a picture of that and then go to this fantastic resource that takes us into action. So mm-hmm. I'd love for you to go, like, especially the reflection part, where you go beyond knowledge and information. We get a lot of information all the time about, you know, the climate change and the mass extinction of species and all of that. That's a lot of information. But you take us beyond that. So please share with us what your thoughts on that is.
Okay, so... As with all of the cards, they start off with the first person. So you're talking in the first person when you read a small passage. So I'll start with that. I am the honeybee. I work tirelessly to produce my honey, my pollen, and to carry out my irreplaceable work of pollination. My species is severely threatened due to the use of toxic pesticides, destruction of my habitat, and lack of forage due to monocultures. Without me, coffee, apples, almonds, tomatoes, and cocoa, to name just a few of the crops, would be wiped out. Besides the many benefits to humanity, like all living species, I have intrinsic value in my own right. So then we proceed to read information about the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, talks about the world's food production and how it's dependent on bees, how many species of flowers they pollinate, 250,000. And like you said, it goes on to give you a good understanding of how important they are, not only, well, to humans. So it's not only the environment, but it's us. Then we go to the contemplation, which is the exercise of Visio Divina. And then after you do that exercise, which really opens you up.
Well, let's pause there.
Yes.
The exercise would entail what?
Okay, so I'll read that out for you because it's each one of them. So when you go to, when after you've gone through those two steps, then you go to page 25, which is where you have the actual exercise. So I will read that to you. Visio Divina, or sacred seeing, is an ancient form of prayer and meditation. Follow these steps to enter deeply into the essence of the depicted species and what it might be telling you. In this case, you would be looking at the image of the honeybee on the card. Select a quiet place for this exercise. Take three deep breaths. Begin to gaze softly upon the image on your chosen card. What shapes, details, and colors do you notice? What feelings arise? Meditate on the aspect of the image that most deeply speaks to you. Is there a message that pertains to your life today? Sit with and dwell on the thoughts, feelings, and sensations that are evoked. So you would sit with that for a while. And afterwards, once you're done with that part of the exercise, then we move to reflection. And now is the time to gather all your impressions and record them by journaling. You may also use the process of automatic writing to further access your intuitive response to this image. To begin, take several deep breaths and relax. Imagine yourself as the honeybee, alighting on blossoms and drinking in their sweet nectar. Allow yourself to be enveloped by empathy for this living being. How does its plight impact yours, your life? Write what comes to you without lifting your pen or pencil from the paper. Do not stop to critique what you write. If nothing is coming, then write, nothing is coming. Let the words flow.
And I want to say right there, that's where that automatic writing comes in. Just let your intuition, just let your arm, your fingers, your hand, just write out whatever comes. And as you say, without judgment. And it might surprise you. Have you had people report back to you surprises?
Well, not yet. You know, it just was released on on the 6th. So I have yet to get feedback. So we shall
see. So we're speaking in January of 2026.
That's
so
correct.
It's just now available. And one of the things that I loved that you suggested is you can do this in circle work. That you, I want to try it with my women's group. I want us each to pick a card and go through the whole effort and gazing and seeing with the heart and then doing some journaling. And then each of us share what we came up with. I love that, doing it in circle in some way.
I think that is going to be very powerful because then you can create a kind of synergy with that group. You know, you're not just doing it on your own. Although, you know, doing it on your own, you still have that option of scanning the QR code, and then you're introduced to this whole world of people who are working night and day to keep these animals on the planet and to reverse biodiversity loss. So, yes, I think you're right. I think that's a really exciting part of this.
And I'm just reminded, too, of your concept of humans as part of the overall species on the planet. We think of ourselves as so particularly special and above or separate from all the rest of us. And you really bring us back to, oh, we're just one of the species on the planet, although we're a particularly destructive species, I must say. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you mentioned before that Thomas Berry talked about like reinventing the human at the species level, that to perceive and to understand that we're a species among species, and we all have our unique gifts. Terence McKenna, I don't know if you ever heard his name, the ethnobotanist, he says our problem is species-centered narcissism.
There you go.
Narcissism is what's wrong with this world today. I was just, I don't know who I was reading, but they were talking about, you know, on every level, it's not, we're not connecting with each other, either within our own species either, you know. It's this fragmentation that is throughout the world now. And so to recognize that we're a species among other species, I mean, to me, it's a joyful understanding.
We become aware of our kinship with all of life. We're in circle with all of life, and we're dependent on it. I'm reminded of a quote that I wrote down that you refer to in your writings of Thomas Berry, and he said, "We cannot take our next breath without the oxygen produced by the forests and the oceans. The earth and all of the life it contains is our larger self. We are part of its total life. Earth and all its beings are in the image of the divine." You know, so he really says it so clearly there. It's a biocentric view of life instead of an anthropocentric view of life.
Exactly. He also, when I heard him quote Thomas Aquinas, it was really the clincher for me. And I would like to read that quote if I could.
Oh, good. I would love for you to do that. But first of all, I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Angela Mano, and she is an award-winning visual artist, and she is the creator of the Sacred Biodiversity Oracle. And if you want more information about her work, you can go to her website, angelamano.com, and she spells her name M-A-N-N-O, her last name Mano, angelamano.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Clarity International, publisher of the book Get Clarity, The Lights-On Guide to Manifesting Success in Life and Work. GetClarity.com. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. NewDimensions.org.
I'm here with Angela Mano, and she is the creator of the Sacred Biodiversity Oracle, which is a card deck, 36 cards with introductions to each card and the beautifully, beautifully done images in the form of traditional icons